This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. I'm Rick Pantaleo, sitting in for Carol Castiel. A few weeks ago, as he delivered a commencement address at the U.S. Coast Guard Academy, U.S. President Barack Obama warned that climate change is a serious threat to global security.
Climate change will impact every country on the planet. No nation is immune. So I'm here today to say that climate change constitutes a serious threat to global security, an immediate risk to our national security. And make no mistake, it will impact how our military defends our country. And so we need to act, and we need to act now.
One of the biggest issues in public debate today is climate change, or as some call it, global warming. Since our program is only 25 minutes long, there's really no way that we can provide a forum for a real debate on such a complex issue. Instead, we'd like to offer a conversation on both sides of the climate change issue and leave it up to you to make your own conclusions. Joining me today by telephone is Adriana Quintero, founder and executive director of Voces Verdes, which is a coalition of Latino organizations, health professionals, business and community leaders for environmental policy, climate solutions, and clean energy. Also joining me today by telephone is James Taylor, Vice President of External Relations and a Senior Fellow of Environmental Policy at the Heartland Institute based in Chicago, Illinois. According to their website, the Heartland Institute is a national nonprofit research organization dedicated to finding and promoting ideas that empower people. Now, we've heard about both global warming and climate change as if the two terms were interchangeable. Adriana, are they?
Absolutely, they are. I think that early on we began to talk about climate change as global warming because generally what we will see is the temperatures trending upwards, and we've seen that significant increase over the past few decades. But the reality of it is that it goes beyond that, and when you're talking about climactic patterns, it's not as simplistic as saying, well, we're going to have warmer temperatures across the board. This might mean more storms in some places. It might actually mean longer winters in other places. It's truly a changing of the climate overall, and climate patterns vary greatly, but the general trend upwards continues to be one of warming. So I think that people wrongly assume that, oh, well, we had a warm winter, that means there's no climate change. Well, no, that's a really simplistic way of looking at things. It is climate change, and that is just a more accurate term than global warming.
James, do you believe that the world is currently undergoing climate change? And if so, why?
Well, absolutely. The world is always undergoing climate change, and we've known that for quite some time. If you look back over the past few thousand years, we've had periods where temperatures have warmed significantly, declined significantly. And what's real interesting is when you look back over the past, say, 7,000-8,000 years, temperatures for the most part have been warmer than today. So it's really interesting to put recent warming in context. The reasons for a recent warming are probably a combination of natural and human factors. We do know that solar output has increased over the past 100 years. The sun's output is not constant. It's not steady. There have been changes. But we also know that carbon dioxide is a greenhouse gas. And if you add more to the atmosphere, you can expect that you'll get some warming. And the key is to find out how much warming will occur and what the consequences will be.
So in other words, you're not questioning that the planet is warming, but the fact that it's not necessarily man-made in nature.
I would say even more so than those points, the issues in dispute are how much warming can we expect, what will be the consequences, good or bad, and I guess also what are the contexts of the current temperatures that we're seeing. The fact that we're not in the Little Ice Age anymore is not in dispute, and the fact that humans are adding greenhouse gases to the atmosphere are not in dispute. So that's not really the key issue here.
Adriana, your thoughts?
I actually think that that is correct. The issue is not whether or not humans are causing climate change. We are. We're contributing to the CO2 in the atmosphere. We know that all of the 10 hottest years on record since we started taking global temperatures back in 1880 have happened since 1997. So, you know, again, this is not an accident or an outlier. It's a long-term trend that isn't going away. And I think that Mr. Taylor put it correctly. We need to see exactly how quickly this is happening and what we can do about it. And the truth is that we have a lot of opportunity to stop this. The fact that this trend is happening so quickly is actually one of the most dangerous aspects. We as humans can adapt over a number of hundreds of years, but with these trends that we're seeing so quickly develop, we simply don't have the time. So we need to stop the speed with which this change is happening right away, and we can do that by limiting the CO2 that we're putting into the atmosphere, and that starts with limiting carbon pollution.
James. And, you know, it's real interesting. Adriana brings up good points where we have areas of agreement, and then we have areas where we don't quite see things the same. So Adriana says that we need to limit rapid global warming, and she mentions the temperatures over the past 10 years being higher than over the past 100. And I would say that the proper context is more looking at the past few thousand years and what we see there. And most of the time period's been warmer than today. We've had more rapid warmings and coolings. And we've seen that warmer climate has generally benefited human health and welfare as opposed to current temperatures. But she did a very good job of pointing out where we have our areas of agreement and disagreement.
In other words, let me get this thought from the both of you. Adriana, you first. Do you think climate change or global warming poses an immediate and serious threat to our way of life?
Absolutely. Climate change or global warming is very real. It's here now, and it's very dangerous. And the truth is that these are facts. If we didn't have solutions at our fingertips, then maybe this discussion would be different. But we have solutions. We know, and we've already made great strides in moving towards renewable power and energy efficiency. And that is going to solve the worst of these impacts.
And I would say that we have to look at empirical data. We know from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration that the frequency and severity of tropical storms, including hurricanes, of tornadoes, those have become less frequent, less severe. We also know that as temperatures have warmed, we've seen that global soil moisture has increased at nearly all stations in the Global Soil Moisture Data Bank. We see crop production has improved with more carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, longer growing seasons, and more precipitation. And just this week, it was noted that the long drought in sub-Saharan Africa in the Sahel region that was the inspiration for We Are the World and USA for Africa, that drought and famine, which killed more than 100,000 people, was ended because of warming temperatures. So those are some of the things that often we don't consider, that there are many benefits. We tend to, as humans, look at change with fear, but looking at objective data and looking at the longer context where warmer temperatures have always benefited humankind, I would say that this is not something that we should be fighting, rushing to judgment on, but embracing.
The truth is that we're not rushing to judgment on any of this. We know very well. Well, it's this. You know, bottom line is when you look at the science, it's there. We can say the drought has shifted from sub-Saharan Africa to California, where I live, and have zero doubt that we've got an issue going here. But rather than do what we're doing in the U.S., which is politicize the issue of climate change and make this scientific debate with politicians out there talking about how they're not scientists, we need to truly just answer the call, realize that we have better ways of doing things. Let's face it, we could all be driving around in late Model Ts made back in 1900s, and they would work, they would run, but why would we want to do that? And it's the same thing with coal. Why would we want to keep on relying on fossil fuels when we have renewable technologies? It's simple. I don't think that anybody would want to trade their newest iPhone for an old brick car phone that you had to carry around in a bag. It just simply doesn't make sense to continue to do things in an outdated fashion when we know that we're causing damage to the planet. Why not fix it and do things better and therefore leave a better planet for future generations?
Adriana, I'm curious, Adriana. You just mentioned, and James just mentioned, the droughts in Africa and California. What I'm curious about is, what about natural weather anomalies like El Nino? Does that have more to do with it than perhaps global climate change?
The global temperature, if you look at what NASA has said about El Nino, that even with that consideration, record global temperatures in 2014 have increased. I mean, there's no doubt it was, again, a record. We keep setting these records that we don't want to set. And that is with little help from El Nino. So even considering those shifts, we can expect that El Nino in 2015 is going to be significantly warmer than 2014. So, again, it's not so much about the warming, it's about the climate changes, the patterns, and how those are shifting. So we can't simply discard this. And again, we can simply look at the concentration of CO2 in the atmosphere to see that we're contributing to this.
And I would point out that the mere fact that we're having some warming doesn't mean that we're facing crisis or even anything negative. The proper context for our current temperatures is not what's happened over the past 100 years. That's a very small fragment of time, even for just a period of human civilization. If we go back over the 7,000, 8,000 years since human civilization first developed, we know for a fact that temperatures have been, for most of that time period, warmer than today. Human health and welfare benefited during those warmer time periods, and people were able to deal with warmer temperatures and thrive under those temperatures with far less advanced technologies than we have today. And I think that Adriana's point about telephones and the old bricks and all that is appropriate, but I think she's got it wrong. The solar power technology, the wind power technology that predated coal-fired power plants and SUVs that people often vilify, the fact of the matter is these have been tried and failed. And the reason they failed is because they're substantially more expensive than conventional energy. And what happens when we rely on much more expensive energy? It means people are stuck in poverty. It means that when we have droughts and famines, people aren't able to deal with it. It means that people in third world nations, like in Africa, when they have a drought, 100,000 plus people are going to die. And I think that's a very tragic situation. I think that giving people the resources to live their lives with good housing, good health care, good nutrition, the things that you need wealth to have, I think that's the route to take.
And Adriana, let me ask you this. Temperature statistics, which many scientists base their studies and their projections on, are gathered by land-based stations or they're measured by satellites. Does each of these methods verify the other, or are there significant variations between what is gathered by Earth-based stations and those gathered by satellites?
The truth is that our satellite technology is changing, I mean, almost by the minute. So I don't know that I know the exact answer to that. I would be assuming. I think that we probably have, as in all scientific data gathering, the better choice is to consider all of the data and then look at it together and come up with a conclusion. I don't know enough about what's been collected where in order to comment on that specifically. I would like to say that the line from the coal industry that Mr. Taylor points out, that misconception that the only way to keep people out of poverty is by drilling the heck out of our planet, is really, again, simply false. Because what we know is that right now, these clean energy technologies like wind and solar are actually providing a tremendous amount of opportunity for some of the places that have precisely been in dire poverty, because it's simply not the case that the only solution is to burn fossil fuels. We know that now, the more that we use these technologies, as with everything in a free market economy, the more that we use them, the lower the prices go. And we've seen that dramatic drop in the price of solar. So while this isn't something that has happened overnight, we have seen a trend towards these renewable energies. And again, the only place that we're really seeing this debate so politicized is here in the U.S., and that's due to the coal industry's interest in keeping their industry alive and at helm. So we can do better. We need to do better. And luckily, around the globe, we're seeing that trend towards renewables, and we're hoping to have a strong agreement in Paris this year where countries will come together and agree to some very ambitious goals, like the ones we're setting here in the U.S., to make sure that we can fight fossil fuels and transition to a clean energy technology life.
Well, I'm not a member of the coal industry, and I don't believe the U.S. Energy Information Administration, the federal government, is either. And what I can tell you that according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration, a solar power, even with today's technologies, even after they've advanced to the point where they're not nearly as expensive as solar power used to be, still, according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration, for solar power facilities, that'll be built, say, next year. And over the 30-year lifespan of their facilities, they're going to be 3 to 5 times more expensive in terms of the power that they produce than conventional power. And if you're going to increase energy costs 3 to 5 times over what they are now, If you're paying $200 a month on your power bill, now you'll be paying $600 to $1,000 per month. That has dramatic consequences. It's not just what you pay in your own individual home power. Every good and service in the economy is heavily dependent on affordable energy. You're going to see all the goods and services that you purchase becoming much more expensive. Those have real impacts. Now, if we were truly in a situation where the planet was frying, we needed to save the Earth, well, then you pay what it takes. But when you look at the temperature data, as you mentioned earlier, we have the satellite data, we have the surface data. The satellite data and the raw temperature data on the surface show very minimal warming. We're having some warming. We're adding carbon dioxide to the atmosphere. The only data sets that show a divergence from what the satellite and the actual raw thermometer data on the surface show are after some of the government overseers. They take the data, they manipulate the data, they make adjustments to the data that always seem to make past temperatures colder and current temperatures warmer. But even with that data, even after, you know, whichever data set you choose, it doesn't change the fact that temperatures for the past several thousand years have been warmer than today for the vast majority of the time. We're seeing a very modest warming, and with that modest warming, we are seeing increased crop production. We're seeing expansion of forests. We're seeing the retreat of deserts. And although we may still have droughts here and there, I mean, droughts have always occurred and always will, so we're having one in California right now. We do know that according to the Palmer Drought Severity Index, we're seeing fewer droughts. According to the Global Soil Moisture Data Bank, we're seeing fewer droughts. So we have to look at the totality of circumstances. And when you look at it that way, we see that nothing has changed now from what has always been the case. Warmer temperatures have always benefited human health and welfare, and warmer temperatures are currently doing the same.
I need to jump in here and remind our listeners that you're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. My guests are James Taylor from the Heartland Institute, based in Chicago, Illinois, and Adriana Quintero, founder and executive director of the environmental advocacy group Voces Verdes. I'm Rick Pantaleo, and we're having a conversation on climate change. Encounter can also be heard online as a podcast, so please visit our website at voanews.com/encounter. We'd also love to hear from you, so send us an email with your feedback to encounter@voanews.com or just like us on Facebook at Carol Castiel VOA. Adriana and James, I brought up the temperature statistics for a reason, and that's because earlier this year, California Republican Representative Dana Rohrabacher, who is a senior member of the House Science, Space, and Technology Committee, had some issues and criticized NASA and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration for allegedly tampering with temperature data to create an artificial warming trend. James, let's go to you first.
Yeah, well, the satellite instruments, it's a very precise formula. Basically, they use microwave radiation. The satellite instruments, they use microwave sounders that are able to give us, by a precise formula, what the temperature of the atmosphere is at all levels and throughout virtually the entirety of the Earth. According to that data, and there are multiple data sets so that they are supporting each other, we're seeing a warming of approximately 1 degree Celsius per century. And that's less than half of what the climate models programmed by United Nations folks are telling us that we should be expecting. When we see that over a period of 35 years, temperatures are much lower than what the models are predicting, then it tells us that we're programming the wrong data into the models. And in terms of the surface stations, yes, what happens is we have raw thermometer data at the surface that pretty much confirm the satellite data. And what we have is folks who are overseeing NASA and NOAA, whose budgets depend on the perpetuation of an asserted global warming crisis, that make all sorts of adjustments. They continue to make more adjustments, more adjustments, more adjustments, and those adjustments add temperature, add warmth to current temperatures, and for whatever reason, they go back decades, in cases even 100 years or more, and they lower those temperatures. And there's really no justification for it other than to provide the perception that temperatures are warming more quickly than they are.
Adriana.
That's insane. I think it's so hilarious.
I agree. It is insane to do that.
And not you, sir, but the fact that this representative in California would say something. This is globally known, globally recognized. If you look at it, 97% of all scientists agree. We are, in fact, warming. And, in fact, we agreed to that earlier. Is this some crazy ploy by the U.S. government to fool us into being more energy efficient? Or is it some crazy ploy for us to move to cleaner energy so that our children don't die of asthma? We know that coal is a pollutant. There is no debate there. We know that it causes the concentration of CO2 in the atmosphere. We're trying to do something to create a healthier, better world, not to line anybody's pockets with money. On the contrary, the only people who have something to lose in this argument is the coal industry and the fossil fuel industry. But the truth is that this is going to be a slow transition. Why in the world would we stay in the dark ages? It just doesn't make any sense when we know we can protect our health, our well-being, and create a new energy economy like so many other countries are doing. It's time for us to stop talking about this and pretending to cloak it in science when we know that the only thing here are special interests who are trying to protect their backs.
I'm not a special interest here, but I can tell you that the folks who oversee the NASA and NOAA data sets, they themselves say, yes, we adjust the data. It's not an insane allegation. The only dispute is whether or not they can justify what they're doing. You have the satellite temperature records that show one thing. You have the raw temperature data that show the same thing. And then you have the folks who oversee the agencies whose budgets and staffs depend upon this. And in many cases are people who, before even analyzing the data, are global warming activists. They're on the record as such. What you have is the fox guarding the hen house. What we need to have are people who are objective, who are not already out there advocating the programs that Adriana is advocating, that are then saying, oh, now we, in behind closed doors, are going to come out with temperature data sets that show something entirely different than what the satellites show and what the actual thermometer data show. And there's no dispute that they have changed that. They don't deny changing that. And I would say in terms of, Adriana's assertion that we need to get out of the dark ages, I agree. And the problem is when you rely on unreliable, expensive energy that is variable, that you can't always depend upon, that's what keeps us in the dark ages. The dark ages occurred before we had affordable, abundant power. And fortunately, we have that today.
And one final question before we have to wrap things up, and I want to get your quick opinions, both of you. Regarding the ongoing conversation on climate change, some people are saying that the conversation is based more on emotions, politics, and ideology rather than science facts. Adriana, you first.
Well, I'm going to use one of the lines that we've been hearing a lot lately from politicians who oppose us transitioning to cleaner energy. I'm not a scientist, but I do know that 97% of people who are scientists think that we've got a very serious issue on our hands. And I'm not, the same way that I'm not going to go to my doctor, and if 97% of all doctors tell me I have cancer, I'm just going to say, you know what, I'm going to listen to that 3%. I'm going to trust them. So going on that, I think that, yes, are we mired in politics? Absolutely. This debate should not be happening. We should simply know that we have a better way of doing this, that we have a commitment to future generations to provide healthy, cleaner air. And there is no question about it that burning coal and burning fossil fuels causes pollution. So it's time to act.
Okay, before we run out of time, Adriana, I do want to hear from James. Tell us your position on this.
First of all, Adriana mentions 97%. The only surveys of scientists that show 97% agreement are on two simple issues. Have temperatures warmed over the past 100 years, and have humans played some role? And Adriana and I are both in agreement that both questions should be answered yes. But the issues are not whether or not there's some warming, but what are the consequences. In looking at the science, as you point out, if we look at the sub-issues regarding global warming that people are concerned about, hurricanes, tornadoes, droughts, floods, crop production, human health, we know it's a matter of scientific fact from National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and other sources. Hurricanes have become less frequent and severe. Tornadoes have become less frequent and severe. Droughts have become less frequent and severe. Floods, you see, actually, there's no change there. Crop production has increased. Forests have expanded. Deserts have shrunk. This has been the case whenever we've seen a warming planet. It's been a more benign planet for human health and welfare. And for folks who'd like to see the science themselves, do an internet search for Taylor, which is my name, Forbes, and extreme weather, or hurricanes, tornadoes. And I present the data and I document it from sources, from federal data that are indisputable. And I think that as long as temperatures do not fall back to where they were during the Little Ice Age, we're not going to suffer like we did during that time period.
And I'm afraid we're out of time. I really appreciate both of you, Adriana Quintero and James Taylor. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
I'd like to thank my guests, Adriana Quintero, founder and director of Voces Verdes, which is a coalition of Latino organizations, health professionals, business and community leaders for environmental policy, climate solution, and clean energy, and James Taylor, vice president of external relations and a senior fellow of environment policy at the Heartland Institute, based in Chicago, Illinois. Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zaleski for booking our guests. Our engineer was Wagner Roberts. I am Rick Pantaleo, sitting in for Carol Castiel. Join us again next week for another encounter on The Voice of America.